This is the sixth day of this January 2012 Rosh Chodesh Sesshin. And today we'll take up a koan. This is from the Mumon Khan, number 27, Neither Mind Nor Buddha. And here's the case. A monk once asked Nansen, let's use his real name, his Chinese name, which isn't that hard to pronounce, Nanshuan. A monk once asked Nanshuan, is there any Dharma that has never been taught to the people? Nanshuan replied, there is. The monk asked, what is this Dharma that has never been taught? Nanshuan said, it is not mind, it is not Buddha, it is not beings. I'll list a little material about this Nanshuan. Nansen, of course, is his Japanese name. His dates are 748 to 835. One of the most famous of the Tang Dynasty masters and the teacher of the great Zhao Zhou, or Zhoshu. He was a Dharma successor to Ma Zu, Baso. Ma Zu, by the way, is reported to have had 139 enlightened disciples. He's probably one of the half dozen greatest of all the Zen masters. This Nanshuan had 17 Dharma successors that included Zhao Zhou. Nanshuan began his Buddhist career with an extensive study of Buddhist philosophy, including the school of Buddhism known as the Yuan Buddhism or the Avatamsaka, based on the Avatamsaka Sutra. When he came to this master Ma Zu, he'd already had all that. And then after his deep enlightenment under Ma Zu, he built a hut on a mountain, and he lived there for more than 30 years in seclusion. Finally, some Zen monks persuaded him to come down and teach, settle in a monastery. It's said that from that time that he began teaching, the number of students under him never numbered less than 100. That's it. Let's just stop there because we have plenty of other material here. So this monk, we don't know who the monk is, he once asked Nanshuan, is there any Dharma that has never been taught to the people? Dharma here would mean just simply teaching. Is there any teaching that has never been taught to the people? What's he after here? We can't be sure. It's not a beginner's question. He's asking for something beyond the ordinary, something beyond. To which Nanshuan replies, there is. There is. But then the monk then asked, what is this Dharma that has never been taught? Nanchuan says, it is not mind, it is not Buddha, it is not beings. This linkage of these three, mind, Buddha, and beings, maybe originally came from the Avatamsaka Sutra, which, remember, we just said Nanchuan delved into Huayan Buddhism, the basic text of which is the Avatamsaka Sutra. In the Avatamsaka Sutra, it says mind, Buddha, and beings. These three are not different. How are they not different? Mind, Buddha, and beings. Well, there is another koan where a monk asked Basso, what is Buddha? Basso said, this very mind is Buddha. Now this identity of mind and Buddha will not be news to most of you. The masters were continually reminding their students that this very mind is Buddha itself. The most common question that a monk would bring to a Zen master in China was, what is Buddha? And Buddha, as most of you know, if you take it literally to mean the Buddha, it refers to the historical Buddha, the person who came to supreme awakening under the Bodhi tree. But just the word Buddha in and of itself is usually defined as the awakened one. And by that we can expand it a little further to say, really to say, Buddha nature. This, I think, is the most helpful way of understanding Buddha when there's no the in front of it. Buddha nature. So when these monks would ask, what is Buddha, they're really asking, what is Buddha nature? And that itself means the highest truth, ultimate reality. And then the famous response, this very mind is Buddha. Don't be objectifying this word or Buddha nature, making it into something out there that has to be found. It's your own mind, your own true mind. That's the awakened one. There may have been monks, maybe many monks at the time, who were asking as much about the person, the Buddha, as about Buddha nature from other Buddhist sects. There is a worshiping of Lord Buddha. This isn't Zen, but they may have been asking, you know, what is the mind, the nature of this man fundamentally? And that's in there. But in Zen, anything that will get the student to stop being involved in objects that she or he sees outside themselves, anything that will get the student to turn the mind around and look inward, inner light. This is what any teacher wants. There's yet another koan, a third one in the Mumonkan, where a monk asked Basso, "What is Buddha?" This is the same guy who said, "This very mind is Buddha." And Basso answered, "Not mind, not Buddha." Just as we so reflexively get attached to objects, mental objects, and we get attached to words. This is one of the great genius of the Zen school, is the recognition of how easily we get attached to words. And because once we get attached to a word, then we miss the reality that it's pointing to. You know that famous saying, mistaking the finger for the moon. And koan after koan, and dialogue after dialogue, the masters are trying to direct the student back to the direct experience of Buddha, of mind, and away from just the word. So we have these, all of these synonyms for the ultimate. We have Buddha, Buddha nature, true mind, essential mind, original mind. And these words can come to get lodged in the mind and become substitutes, if we're not careful, substitutes for the experience of Buddha, true nature, essential mind, and so forth. It's not in the word. What is Buddha? Not Buddha. Not mind. What is enlightenment? Not enlightenment. Get rid of the idea. Isn't this what Nanxuan's successor, Zhao Zhou, was doing when the monk asked him, "Does even a dog have Buddha nature?" The monk, no doubt, was familiar with the sutras that say, what is common to all beings is this Buddha nature. So when he asked, "Does even a dog have Buddha nature?" quite likely he was looking for an affirmative answer. "Yes, of course. Just as you do, young monk." Instead, what did he get? Moo. Moo is often translated as no. In fact, there are koan commentaries that render it as no. You know, you're assigned the koan no. Well, then the problem with that is you can get attached to the no. I read a book once that's called "They Have a Word for It" is the name of the book, and the subtitle is "A Lighthearted Lexicon of Untranslatable Foreign Words and Phrases." And one of the words, one of the entries, is "mu," and he discusses how it is often translated as "no" or "not," and this is what, if we do translate it that way, then this would be what makes it a koan, if you're considering the story, which one doesn't have to do when working on mu, but if you're considering the story, then that is the bite of the koan. Does even a dog have Buddha nature? No. How can this be? All the sutras say that every single thing, a maggot, a goose, a weed, all are equally endowed with this Buddha nature. Why did Zhao Zhou say no? For a long time now, at least 100 years, as I understand it, students working on Mu are told you don't need to look back to that dialogue between the monk and Zhao Zhou. In fact, don't even do it. Just absorb yourself in the single word Mu. But back to this book and the entry from Mu, he mentions that it's often translated as no or not. But then he goes on into further examination of the word, and he ends up saying, as far as I can tell, the closest, the most complete meaning for the word Mu, the Japanese word Mu, is it's not what you think. Now, as far as a merely linguistic definition, that's pretty good. Does even a dog have Buddha nature? It's not what you think. Get that thought out of your mind, what you've learned. Zen, we are trying to unlearn this, all of this stuff we've accumulated unnecessarily. So Zhao Zhou said, it's not what you think. Basso in this other koan says, not mind, not Buddha. These koans are always, when they're really working, they are pulling out from under us our footing. Our footing meaning our attachment to words and concepts. Hakuin says somewhere, mind is Buddha is like a dragon without horns. Not mind, not Buddha is like a snake with horns. Both of them wrong. So long as we are caught in the words, it's wrong. I've dug out one other dialogue bearing on all this involving Matsu. Remember, he was Nanchuan's teacher. Matsu and another monk by the name of Da Mei. So this Da Mei, when he first came to Matsu, he said, what is Buddha? And Matsu said, this very mind itself is Buddha. And at this word, Da Mei was enlightened. And then he, like Nanchuan, he went off and settled on a mountain. And after a while, Matsu sent a monk to test him. And the monk went there with his question that was given to him by Matsu. And the monk asked Da Mei, dug him out of the, and found him in some hut deep in the reaches of the mountain. And the monk asked Dame, "When you were with the great master Ma Zu, what did you learn from him?" And Dame replied, "The great master told me that this very mind is Buddha." The monk said, "Oh, the great master has lately changed his way of teaching the Buddha Dharma." Dame asked how he had changed. Dame probably had a little smile playing on his face. "How had he changed?" The monk said, "He's now saying that this very mind which is Buddha is neither mind nor Buddha." Dame said, "That old fellow, when will he stop confusing the minds of others? Let him go on with his neither mind nor Buddha. I'm going to stick to this very mind is Buddha." And when the monk returned to Matsu and reported the conversation, Matsu remarked, "The plum is ripe." This is why we often hear later masters commenting on an earlier dialogue. This could be 100 years or 200 years or 500 years after the initial dialogue, the master commenting and saying similar things, taking issue with it, and saying, "Well, he can say what he wants, but I still say, because it doesn't matter, it's not in the words. These guys are playing. They're sporting with words. It's like they're playing catch, horsing around." By the way, the plum is ripe. Matsu here was making a pun of Dame's name. Dame in Chinese can be rendered as big plum. And Mumon's commentary, "If you understand what Basso said, your study of Zen is at an end." Whoa, wrong koan. You've got to admit, there are a lot of similarities in it. All right. The commentary. We're back to neither mind nor Buddha. The commentary, Mumon says, at this question, that is, remember, we're back on, it is not mind, it is not Buddha, it is not beings. At this question, Nanchuan used up all his resources at once. How feeble and awkward. Mumon here is kind of poking fun at Nanchuan for having laid it all out verbally. It's not mind, it's not Buddha, it's not beings. Taking everything away from the monk right from the outset. And then the verse. "Talking too much spoils your virtue. What an effect no words has. Even if the blue ocean should turn into mountains, it will never be communicated to you." Talking too much spoils your virtue. Virtue here is the same, comes from the same character as the virtue that left Bankei stymied. For those of you who are hearing this on as a recording. The last 5 days, we've been reading the teachings of Japanese Zen Master Bankei, whose great doubt mass was prompted by hearing about bright virtue. And he spent years pondering this, what this meant. Virtue, in this sense, does not just mean virtue as opposed to evil. I found a source here. This is in the comments on the Mumonkan by Aitken Roshi, the late Robert Aitken Roshi. He says that this word virtue is one of the keys to Asian culture and indeed to human culture. In Chinese, this virtue is T-E, is pronounced de. So it's the de of the Tao Te Ching, the central text of Taoism. He says if you take power and virtue together, then you have some sense of what this virtue means. The virtue here that Mumon is using and that Bankei struggled with. The bright virtue of Confucian texts. This is the insight or the authority, the spiritual authority that accumulates through long practice. Aitken Roshi says, you feel it and others feel it. It is like the respect for oneself and from others that is experienced in traditional societies with age, experience, and wise decisions. So it's a big, big word. It's a profound word. And here, Mumon is having more fun. Talking too much spoils your virtue. What an effect no words has. What an effect no words has. What does he mean? Nanchuan used words. This is somewhat unusual in Zen koans for him to be so explicitly verbal about it. It's not mind, it's not Buddha, it's not beings. Same as his teacher when he answered, this very mind is Buddha. We can assume that for both of these masters, Nanchuan and his own master, Ma Zu, that the reason they answered in such simple, plain words in such a seemingly explanatory way is because they felt that somehow this would be best for that particular monk they were answering. It's what they needed at that moment. Generally, the words that the masters use in the koans are more difficult to fathom. They're not explanatory. They're illogical words. In order to prompt the student, prod the student to see beyond the words, of course, as Zhao Zhou did with the monk who asked about a dog in Buddha nature. sometimes the words that a master uses in answering questions can be repetitive. There's another koan. This is one in the Blue Cliff record, where a kasan said, "Learning by study is called hearing. Cutting off learning is called nearness. Transcending these two is called real going beyond." So he's probably quoting someone else. And then, this is kasan. Yeah. And then the monk asked, "What is real going beyond?" Kasan said, "Beating the drum." Then the monk asked again, "What is the true teaching of the Buddha?" Kasan said, "Beating the drum." The monk asked again, "I'm not asking you about this very mind is Buddha, but what is not mind and not Buddha?" Kasan said, "Beating the drum." The monk once more asked, "When an enlightened one comes, how do you treat him?" Kasan said, "Beating the drum." I'm reminded here of the Chinese master who, whenever he was asked about the Dharma, just turned his back on the questioner. Some of the best teaching in Zen is where the teacher just reflects back to the student what she or he is asked. Just turning it back, knowing the teacher knows that the student doesn't need answers from him, that the student is endowed with all wisdom, bottomless, unfathomable wisdom. It just needs to mine this treasure. Question himself foremostly. Could present many questions here that would, for which the answer could be the same as what Kasan is saying here. The decisions that we may face, that we try to sort out at the level of the discriminating mind, and just spend way too much time pondering, getting lost. In a sense, we can say, in a very real sense, that so long as we're making a decision, it can't be the right decision. So long as I am making a decision, it's still at the level of thoughts, sorting out pros and cons, right and wrong. We need to get beyond, to get underneath this level of this and that. Should I go to Doksan or should I not go to Doksan? Beating the drum. Boom, boom, boom. Or moo. Should I go to the exercise period or should I sit? Boom, boom, boom. keep sitting into the night or should I go to bed? Boom, boom, boom. Dive underneath it all. To the depths of the mind, where these waters are still. And then final two lines of the verse. Even if the blue ocean should turn into mountains, it will never be communicated to you. What is this Dharma that has never been taught? The Dharma that cannot be taught is the Dharma that has never been taught. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.